Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Peter Mock. He's a longtime mystery book expert, now at McIntyre's Book, formerly at the Intimate, old-time wonderful bookstore in Old Chapel Hill. Right now, he is the judge for something called the Belty Prize, and he's trying to select this year's best mystery suspense thriller book. And so I've invited him here to talk about the contest and to talk about what it takes to make a good mystery or thriller, and maybe a little something about the 8 books that he selected as the long list, 8 books that are in contention for the prize, which will be awarded early in 2019.
Yes.
Pete, welcome.
Thank you, D.G. Good to be here.
Well, tell us about your tell us about the Belty. What in the Belty Prize? Where is that? Who's Mr. Belty?
Okay, the Belty Prize is named after the mascots for Farrington Village, where McIntyre's Books is located, and what they are cattle. They are belted Galloway cows, which have been a part of Farrington since the early 70s, and we've become affiliated with them. And so we decided to call the prize the Belty Prize.
So you're not only a judge, you're a part of the great bookstore out there that sits among those belted cows.
Yeah. I am the buyer for the bookstore, the adult side. And I tend to read a lot of mysteries. That's what I relax with for TV. Instead of watching TV, I read a good mystery. And, yeah, we decided to start a mystery prize, sort of our answer to the Edgar Awards and some of these other awards, where I would be very disappointed at times when, you know, their list would come out and I go, how come this book isn't on there? Or why isn't this book on there? Why did that person win? And we decided, well, you read enough of them, you know, make your own.
So you're disappointed in the prizes by the we'll call it the establishment prizes. So they're not really getting to the ones that I think are the best. So we'll have our own.
Exactly. I'm going to put my 2 cents in there.
Well, this is the second year. What did you learn in the first year about prize awarding?
Right now, it's still a work in progress. You know, I am the sole judge and jury of this prize. I am now starting to get people who will put their own 2 cents in. Customers, publishers as well. They will forward me titles that they think I should take a look at. In the past, basically, I choose the books from what I have read. And I read whatever I want. You know, I do not read the bestsellers. I try to find authors that people have not heard of. I'm always trying to enlighten my customer base that there are more writers out there than just the big ones. The New York Times bestsellers, or the ones that you're going to see on the front lines of a Barnes & Noble or in the top 10 list at an Amazon or whatever. I want to introduce people to good new fiction that they're not going to find in other places. And so that's what I look for. And I think the list that I have here kind of represents that. It represents it pretty good.
Well, are you trying to slap the other prizes upside the head and say you guys are missing so much? You're not picking. You're just going with the flow.
Sometimes, yes. You know, I'll give an example. I was invited to the Edgar Awards, I guess about 5 years ago. Soho Press.
I just happen, for some reason, to know what the Edgar Awards are, but I think most people listen. What are the Edgar Awards, and where did that name come from, and who gets those awards?
Okay, the Edgar Awards, you know, honors Edgar Allan Poe, and it is sort of like the Oscars of American mystery prizes. So it's like the biggest prize you can get. And I was invited by a particular publisher because I was a big fan of
promoter of and seller of mystery writing.
Exactly. And I was up there. I'm sitting at their table, and it was Stuart Neville. He was the person I was there with. I'm blanking on his name.
The winner was. Well, that's okay.
No, I knew who the winner was. A North Carolina guy was on the finalist. And Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
I read all three of them.
You'd read all of those books.
I read all the three finalists. My least favorite was Stephen King. And Stephen King wins. Why did he win? Because of his name. In my opinion.
In your opinion, that he's always going to have the edge.
Yes.
Well, he's earned that right, hasn't he? I mean, he's earned it by writing. You don't agree.
No. Because, I mean, it's for the best. It's not like a Lifetime Achievement Award. And in my opinion that year, no, I didn't think the best won. And it happens a lot, so I decided, I'm going to start my
own. Do you remember who won?
Yeah, Stephen King.
Stephen King, and have you remembered? Was it John Hart? Was the
North Carolina
contestant? It's okay.
Yeah, he lives in Wilmington.
All right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. If I remember, I'll tell you.
A mystery. Well, what that leads me because the Edgar Awards and the Belty Awards, which you oversee, have the same challenge of identifying what is the book that qualifies to be a mystery, suspense, thriller that we're looking for? We're going to talk about some of the books that you've selected as the what we call the long list, the books that are in contention for your award this year, and they're all different. I mean, some have cops and robbers, and others don't. They just have dead people, or some of them have dead people, or some kind of. How do you pick which ones? You just go with the publisher and what that publisher does to identify the book.
Well, I mean, there's so many genres within mysteries and thrillers, mm-hmm. and so on, that basically what I do is I read a lot, and I will put aside the ones that really stick with me. And I let that pile grow, and I create what I call my super long list, which is just a long list of
– maybe 25 or 30 or something like that.
Last year was 37.
Oh.
And so then I go back through that list, and I start thinking about the ones that I've read, and I narrow them down to the ones that really stood out for me. And it takes I think about it a lot. And I sometimes, change my mind. Sometimes, like there's one book on here where I wish I swapped it out with something else because I kind of forgot about it. But for the most part, I pick the ones that stand out the best for me and the ones that I enjoyed the most.
So you're not afraid to say, this is my these are my favorite books.
Exactly.
For whatever reason. And you would say, I can tell you some of the reasons, but some of them, it's just, it grabs me as being right for me.
Exactly. I've been doing this for so long, and I consider myself sort of like, Joe Normal. And if I like a book, I think a lot of people will like that book. And so I kind of look at, too, who will appreciate this book?
Well, before we move on, tell us about last year's contest and the book that you selected to be the winner and what it was about and why you liked it so much.
Last year's winner was a book called Safe by the author Ryan Gaddis. This is like his third or fourth book. His previous books, he did a good one called Kung Fu High School. And another one he did was a really good book, good novel based around the Rodney King riots. Safe was this very hard, gritty story about a safecracker working for the DEA. And he and his girlfriend, who – this is like 2007. His girlfriend worked for a bank in the loan department. And she kind of saw the crash coming. And she knew who was going to get hurt. And so she and her boyfriend, the safecracker, are skimming off the top of some of these safes that he is cracking for the DEA.
So he's working for the government.
Mm-hmm.
He cracks the safe of the suspects.
They're drug busts. You know, these are safes for drug gangs and so on.
And so he's in addition, while he's got it open for the government, before the government
he's like
gets the contents, he slips a little bit of the cash.
A little bit.
Okay.
But they need one last big haul, and he finds it, and he takes it. Now the gang wants him. Now it turns out that the enforcer for this gang is also a DEA informant. And our safecracker's boss is cheating on the government. So you got this triangle thing.
Everybody's bad.
And you got this great triangle going on. And it was just one of these roller coaster rides that just gets your heart pumping. The writing was great, crisp, hot, dialogue sharp. And I just loved that book. And so I had never read it before until I read Safe. And it was like, wow.
Well,
this baby stands out.
Tell us his name again.
Ryan Gaddis.
And you still got a few copies of that book for sale out at McIntyre's.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If you joined us late, I'm learning from Pete Mock, who works at it at Farrington in McIntyre's bookstore, about his Belty Prize for this year's Best Mystery. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. If you join us late, I'm visiting with Pete Mock. Pete's the mystery book expert in these parts, and he is also the sole judge of McIntyre's book's second year, what they call the Belty Prize, which will be awarded for Pete's selection of the best mystery suspense thriller for the last year. Pete, I wanted to learn more from you about mystery writing and what makes good mysteries and what mysteries are. And maybe the way to do it is to talk about a few of the books that you've selected to be among the eight, I'll call them semifinalists, the long list of books that are in contention. And you were nice enough to lend me these books, and so I've taken a look at them. And the first one I'd like for you to talk about is called Lullaby Road. And when you see the title, what in the world can a Lullaby Road be? Tell us about this book. James Anderson is the author.
Well, Mr. Anderson, his first book, The Never Open Desert Diner, was on my list last year as well.
Is it on the short list or the long list?
It was on the long list.
On the long list, okay.
And what I like about this, the main character in this is a trucker who works a 100-mile stretch of highway in Utah. And he is basically the FedEx UPS driver for that area. And he makes deliveries to all these eccentric characters and so on. And it's a very kind of sparse countryside, you know.
It's like Utah or someplace like that.
It's in Utah. It's deserty. You know, you've got major climate changes. You know, it can go from 60 degrees to a blizzard at night kind of thing. And you meet all these characters. And the main character, the trucker, the little troubled soul, and he has a lot of time to think. As he's driving along,
like all of us do.
Mm-hmm. As he's driving along. And so there's a depth to this that, you know, I don't find in a lot of others. This is not a book that is a rip-roaring page-turner. It's a little more thoughtful. Things do happen. But it's
just... Well, the action starts really on the first couple of pages of this book with and there's a child involved.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What happens?
Well, there's a child that has been left behind with a note saying "Help me," or something along those lines. It's been a while since I've read
the book. Little baby, or
the child, and And our guy takes his child and
puts him in the truck?
Puts it in the truck.
Or puts the baby in the truck.
Mm-hmm, and takes it home and gives it to a friend who's helping him do a lot of things. And they look after it. And it turns out it's going to be part of a much larger operation of human trafficking, which is becoming a really big issue in mystery fiction now. And our truck driver gets involved in all of that. And within all of this, you're also meeting all these eccentric characters, and it's like a family. You're getting to know this family of characters. And he just does a really good job. He's not your typical mystery writer, and that's what I like about him.
You like this was unusual. Do we have a death? I mean, we always got to have somebody die in a mystery, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
I can't say.
I can't say. Okay.
Yeah.
You don't want to spoil it for me,
no.
Is that it? Or you can't remember now?
I don't want to spoil it.
All right. I think the thing that interested me about this one was the setting and the people that I'm not familiar with the desert or with Utah. And all of a sudden, this author has put me right there in the middle of some place that's strange to me. So I'm not only getting a story, but I'm getting a visit.
Exactly.
In an inside way.
Yeah.
And is that something that attracts you as much as the story?
Yes. Setting is very important to me. The better the setting, the stronger the setting, I think the better the story. You're going to pick up the next book.
No, I want you to finish. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, because the next book is a perfect example.
All right. Well, the next book is Gravesend by William Boyle. Tell us about that book.
This is in Brooklyn. You know, everybody's been to Brooklyn, but read Gravesend and you're living in Brooklyn.
I felt the same thing this did as good a job, well, almost as the Utah book did, of lifting me up and setting me down right in the middle of a place that's strange to me. And Brooklyn is supposedly a part of New York, but this is different from Manhattan.
Yeah. It's just it's a super strong setting where it's like I say, it's like you are now living in Brooklyn. You are walking the streets. You are passing the bars. You're seeing the stores. You're going to the stores. You're walking to the brownstones. You're visiting the neighbors. The setting is really strong. And that really adds to the story. And the story itself is really good too. You know, I love the characters. I love his dialogue.
Well, tell me about Ray Boy. He's just out of jail. going to be the target.
Ray Boy was a tough guy. And he goes to prison, and he comes out a changed man. He now wants to atone. And this is a novel of atonement where Ray Boy is willing to give up his life to atone for the crime that he committed. And the crime he committed was against the brother of this young man who now wants to revenge himself on Ray Boy. And the two come together.
Conway wants to kill him.
Yeah.
And so we don't have we have a murder. In, rather than having a dead body, we got a murder contemplated and sort of
a murder in sort of starting to happen. And Conway, Ray Boy is ready to bow down and give himself up. He's just, I'm yours. Do what you want. And the other guy's like, doesn't get it. And it kind of, you know, pops his balloon in a way. It's just smart. It's a good flip on things.
Well, I'd like to talk some more about the plot, but you don't like to give away the essence of the story because you want the readers to buy it.
Exactly.
There are two things about this book that interested me just about the book itself, and that is that it was first published in France. What's going on here? American mystery set in Brooklyn gets published in France before it's published here.
You know, I'm not too familiar with that, but I will say that publishing has changed a lot since I started working 35 years ago. It is now, there are so many venues to get yourself published, but if you want to get published by a big press, it gets harder and harder and harder, and authors are finding new ways to get around that, and some of that is to go overseas. One of my favorite guys is a gentleman by the name of Castle Freeman Jr., who writes out of Vermont. And one of my favorite books of all time is one called Go With Me. And I read that, and I was, like, anxiously waiting for his next book. I find out later that he had gone overseas and published all his books after Go With Me in Britain, and they weren't available in the States at all. And that's partly because sales probably were not very strong for him here, and so he went overseas.
Well, if I'm your customer and I come to you and I say, I want another one and it's sold in Britain, how do you figure out a way to get that book in your customer's hands?
There's
ways, but you won't tell us how.
Yeah. It's a secret. I mean, I, the store, cannot get it for you. I can tell you some little secrets, which I don't want to really say. But, yeah, no, it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. But that's just the way it is.
Well, before we take a break, one other aspect of this book that interested in me, maybe you can tell us a little bit about it, is that William Boyle, although he was born in Brooklyn, he now writes and lives in Oxford, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not the way it works. It's usually that the guy from the South goes north and writes the book about his or her upbringing. This guy moves south and writes about his upbringing in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and I think it actually probably helps him. You know, Oxford has such a strong literary tradition, and I think that being down there gives him a distance that allows him to look at his story, to look at the setting from a distance with a fresh eye instead of being immediately right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that distance, I think, actually probably helps him a little bit.
Well, if you did join us late, we're talking about mysteries, and we're talking about them with the expert, at least in this region, Pete Mock, who works at McIntyre's and is the judge for the upcoming Belty Mystery Prize for this past year. And so he and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Belty Prize, and the Belty Prize is a creation of McIntyre's books, and it's selected the sole judge of the Belty Prize for the best mystery suspense thriller novel of the past year is Pete Mock, who is talking to us about the books that he's considering. We've got 8 books here that are on his long list. And I could talk about any one of them, or I could get you to talk about any one of them, I guess, for the rest of the program. But let's move along and go to the next book, which is called The Last Hack. Will you tell us a little bit about that book?
The Last Hack by Mr. Brookmeyer. I'm a big fan of his.
I would just say I was struck. He's not a newcomer. He's sold over 1 million copies of his books, so he's established. He's got his fans here, I guess.
Not so much here in the States. He's over in Europe.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the States, not so much, which is a shame. And I want to introduce him to more people. And this is a very good introduction if you've never read him before. The main character is a reporter who has his ways to get the news that to get the scoops that he wants. Sometimes not the best ways, a little nefarious at times. And in this one, he's working for an online news organization, and he is working on this one, you know, investigative, you know, arm, and he finds out that this young hacker is doing the same thing, but for more personal reasons. And they kind of team up, and it is their story. And what is great about this is it's in London, and the characters and the dialogue, all of that. The best thing about all of these is the dialogue and the characters and the settings. And with him, there's a nice balance of humor as well. And this is an incredibly readable page-turner that is a part of a long series featuring this character.
Tell us some more about the character. It's set in London. Is he British? Is the character British?
The character is British, yes.
And so tell me his name again.
Jack Parlavane.
And so you got to – back to your role as a seller of books, out at Farrington, and you know who the fans who've been reading this guy's books are, and you come and say, hey, there's another one, and you know you've got an automatic sale.
Exactly. You know, once I can get people reading a particular author, I can start, you know, ramping those sales up and knowing that, yes, I've got automatic sales there. And it helps when the author is really good, and he's very consistent, and Brookmeyer is very consistent. I can't say that any of his books that I've read are bad. Most authors, especially when they have a long series, ebbs and flows. It goes up and down. You know, they might have a string of three or four really good, strong ones in a row, and then flat for a few, and then they'll pick it up again, sort of like an EKG in a way.
Well, this book and the characters reminded me of because of the youthful expert, the girl with the golden tattoo. Do you remember that book?
Mm-hmm.
What was the girl's name?
Yeah, Elizabeth Sanders.
Elizabeth Sanders. Was that deliberate, you think? Did he steal the idea from?
Yeah. You know, I think.
But, I mean, to me, that's an enticement to read this book because I loved those flawed characters in that series of books.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing many, many more flawed characters like that since Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and that kind of thing, especially with, you know, the female computer hackers kind of thing.
Well, let's I would really love to talk about that one some more, but let's move on to The Plea and tell us about that book.
I will say that this is my page turner of the year. This was, to me, just one big book of fun. From page one to page 320 or however long many pages there are, I was just flying through this book. It is fast-paced. Your adrenaline gets going. Takes place over roughly 48 hours, featuring a defense lawyer. His name is Eddie Flynn. And, oh, man, I had so much fun with that book. Loved
it. Well, you know, I used to be – I'm still a licensed lawyer, so I love lawyer books. And this guy's not just an ordinary lawyer. He had a career. Well, we say that there's some lawyers who are flim-flam guys as lawyers. This guy, before he was a lawyer, he was a flim-flam guy. What kind of deals did he do to – what were his flim-flamming?
Oh, he just did these scams, you know.
Just give me money and I'll get you back 95% interest or something like that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. You know, steal cars, you know, all kinds of little things like that. And these skills, you know, the sleight of hand, the magic tricks. And he took that into the courtroom and, you know, more oratory than anything else. You know, he's got the silver tongue.
So in this case, you emphasize page turner, but you've got a character that's going to entice some of us, that goes far beyond either the magic of page turning or whatever the plot is. I'm interested in Eddie.
Yeah.
And is that what grabbed you, or what grabbed you about this book?
Eddie. You know, he's super quick-witted. You know, nothing gets by him. No situation is too much for him. You know, he might be run up against a brick wall, but he's going to figure out a way around that brick wall or over that brick wall, and he does. You know, and like I say, this takes place over 48 hours, and it's a locked room mystery that he's got to solve. And it was, this thing was fun.
Well, it is a page turner. Did you read this in one sitting?
Pretty much, yeah.
And where did you? And you're a bookseller. You got a job to do. You manage the adult sort of section out at McIntyre's. Where'd you find it? You just wait when there are no customers? You just sit down and behind the counter and read?
No, never read at work. You know, can't concentrate at work. But I really don't watch much television. You know, I might watch a Carolina basketball game, something like that. But at home, yeah, I'm always reading. I roughly read probably about 8 hours a day. And that can get me through almost a book at night.
Wow. You know? And you read at night or you get home from work after hours and you stay up late reading these books?
Stay up late. You know, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll read till 6, go back to sleep for a few hours, go to work, do it all over again. I love to read, and mysteries are my choice, but I mean, I read everything. I read a lot more than that. But I can get through a good mystery in a night with no problem.
If you join us late, this is a very happy conversation for me with Pete Mock, who is the judge, sole judge for the Belty Prize for the Best Mystery Suspense Thriller Novel of the Year. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. And my guest is Pete Mock. He is the judge of the Belty Prize, sponsored by McIntyre's Book and designed to select the best mystery suspense thriller of this preceding year. Pete, first of all, thanks. This is so much fun. We got to hurry, though. We're going to try to cover 4 books in 10 minutes. And the first one that comes up is a book by Tanya French, The Witch Elm, and she's a very distinguished and well-known in the mystery and the literary community. Tell us about The Witch Elm, where it's set, and what the basics of the story and why you selected this book.
The Witch Elm takes place in London, and this is sort of a psychological thriller that will have your head spinning. There is a death, but it's an old death. It's a cold case, and the body is found in a tree in the yard of the uncle.
A skull kind of thing.
No, a skeleton.
A whole skeleton.
Whole skeleton. Found in the hollowed out tree in the middle of the yard of a big close family, the uncle's family. And that's where it all starts.
Who's going to solve this? Who's going to solve this?
Well, you've got the police coming in, but this is one of these stories that just get to have your head spinning. It's really hard to describe because there is a lot to it. And the reason I picked her, she's the most established on the list. And usually an author like this will not make my list because that author is going to have to transcend what they normally do. This is a change of pace for her from her usual stuff. And she is an extremely good writer. And she has created something that she hasn't done before.
Does she have a fan base in your community so that you've got people you can call and say, hey, we got a book by your favorite author that comes in?
Yeah, she's one of the few. She's the only one on this list where actually people actually know who they are, who she is. And they do. They know her book's coming out, and they go, save me a copy.
Tanya French. And we're going to move on, because she's so well-known, to talk about some of these others. But just recently, the New York Times picked its 100 notable books for the past year, and she's on that list, one of 3 mystery suspense thriller writers that the snobby New York Times decides is also great literature. Let's move on to She Rides a Shotgun. What do you say about that book?
This one is a little reminiscent of last year's winner in terms of characterization. It's another hard, gritty story. But what this one has is a very memorable 11-year-old girl who uplifts his story while also taking on the traits of her father, who is protecting her from this rapacious gang that is after them.
That is really interesting. And a few minutes ago, we were trying to remember the name of a mystery writer from North Carolina whom you saw being in contention for the Edgar Prize, and that was Wiley Cash. He'd written this book about a father and his 2 children, one a daughter, running away. And this book sort of reminded me of that.
It's a pretty common theme.
Is it really?
And one of the things about this, and I think I described it to somebody, is that he can take an old subject line, old theme, and create it and make it new again. And that's what he did with this book.
And has he got Harper got a fan base that you can call? Or are you
not
building?
Yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested in him. He is a music journalist, film critic, and TV writer, born and educated in Missouri, but who now lives in Los Angeles. And do you remember? I can't remember where this book is set.
This is California.
In California.
Yeah, at different spots.
The next book is a book called Let Me In by Claire McIntosh. Tell us about this book.
She is a master of psychological suspense. And one of the reasons I picked her is this is sort of like an achievement award in a way. As the sole judge and jury of this prize, I can kind of do that kind of thing. And I picked her because everybody loves Gillian Flynn and all these other people but don't know who she is. And she does the psychological suspense area better than almost anybody that I've ever read. This story
– What is the psychological suspense part of – tell us what you can about
– That's where you're being – the police aren't involved. It's like you're being stalked in a way. Things are occurring around you that you can't explain.
There's a suicide or a supposed suicide of, and are we going to just find out that this wasn't really a suicide and it was a murder and we're going to solve that? Is that the sort of the theme of this?
Yeah, book? That's the gist. And it just how they get to and from all that.
I'd like to talk some more about this. We got one more book we got to cover before we quit, and it's called A Perfect Shot by Robin Yoakum. Tell us about him and tell us about the book.
I like Robin Yoakum a lot. He is a great storyteller. There are some people out there who might be familiar with a book called Black House, which takes place on the Outer Hebrides Islands. And the author of that, whose name all of a sudden I'm blanking on because of the pressure, is a great storyteller. And that is what Robert Yoakum is. Robert Yoakum is a great storyteller. These all take place – this takes place in Ohio in the Rust Belt area. And this is the story of a basketball player who hits the winning shot in the state championship. And for the rest of his life, he's kind of living off of that. And it wears on him. And
he's the high school hero back in town, and people still stop him on the street and remember it.
Yep, and he wants them to do something else, and he starts to do that. There's a mob connection in this. His brother-in-law is an enforcer for like one of the local mob guys.
One of the great characters of all time for me was Tony DeMarco, who is the enforcer, his brother-in-law. Yeah. He's a mean guy.
Exactly.
He does things. This book also reminded me of John Updike. And his what was the name of this character?
Rabbit.
Rabbit was a high school athlete.
Yeah.
In fact, he finally died on the basketball court when he was a grown man because he couldn't give up that title in another sort of Rust Belt setting.
Mm-hmm.
But this author takes Rabbit and does something else with him.
He does. He lives. And makes a new life for himself. And this is his most recent book, and this is part of a series. It's not so much a series, but he's done other books, and each one is set in the same area. And they're interconnected with the same characters, the same places, and so on. And like I said, he's just a super storyteller. And this is the kind of author that I really like to introduce to people. I had a customer in just the other day, and she bought four of them to bundle to give to her sister-in-law because she liked these books so well. She had never heard of this guy until she came in and talked to me, and she tried one. She came back. She tried them all, and now she's giving away.
Well, Pete Mock, thank you so much for visiting with us, telling us about these eight books that are on the long list for your prize. In about 30 seconds, tell us what the future is. When will we know which one of these books is the winner?
Early January, we will announce the top three. And then in early February, we'll announce the winner.
And then what will you do with the winner? What does the winner get?
Hopefully they'll come to McIntyre's and do an event, you know, and we'll put them up at the inn. We're creating a little, hopefully, a nice kind of little prize to give them. and that's still in progress. But yeah, hopefully we can give a nice little treat, bring him to North Carolina.
Well, you've already noticed that one of your writer from last year, what he got was not maybe a lot of money, but it's worth enough to put it on the book jacket of the next printing of his book.
Yeah, the first
won the Belty Prize.
Yeah, winner of the inaugural Belty Prize. It was wonderful.
Well, congratulations to your winners and your long list, and to you for bringing us this wonderful new literary event.
Well, thank you so much. It was great to be here. And folks, come out to McIntyre's. I'll talk to you some more.
Thanks to you, Pete Mike. Thanks to all of y'all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.